Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is Thursday in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My name is Adam Bittner, assistant sports editor for Multimedia at the Post-Gazette, joined today by Paul Zeiss, our sports columnist at the Post-Gazette for our weekly Zeiss is Right video. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing good, Adam. How are you?
Good, good. And just want to remind people before we get into it that we're going to have some Steelers talk here brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. Providing excellent service in Pittsburgh since 1925. Check them out. They are a new sponsor. We're excited to have them on board. So thank you, Pella. And with that said, Paul, I want to get into some Steelers over-unders with you. We're at the time of the year, the deadest part of the calendar for the NFL. Sometimes it's, you know, people like you and me who got to talk about this stuff every day struggle for, you know, content ideas. And so I thought, you know what, let's talk about some of the over-unders that are out there, the gambling industry's expectations for the Steelers and how they jive with, you know, maybe our perceptions. I want to stress, unless Paul wants to make a specific, you know, suggestion, I'm not saying you should go out and place these bets. I'm just saying this is what we think of these over-unders. So, Paul, do you want to get into that?
That sounds – let's do it. It sounds like a plan to me.
All right. Well, the first one we got is Kenny Pickett, over or under – 3,300.5 yards. That comes out to an average about 194 per game. Paul, what do you think of that as an over-under for Kenny Pickett as we enter year two with a lot of expectations that he's going to be, you know, a Joe Burrow light or take a big step here? Do you think 194 yards per game is a low total?
I'm going to go under that, and I'll tell you why I'm going to go under that. The Steelers are going to emphasize running the football. They're going to emphasize playing, you know, really controlled, old school in some ways, football. And that doesn't necessarily mean they're not going to throw it a lot, but what that does is it eats the clock. They play really good defense. If they get a lead, you know, which I think they're going to be leading in a number of their games, they're not going to throw it very much. They're going to try and grind it out and just run clock. So I actually think that it's probably going to be under, but not. That's really not a statement about Kenny Pickett to me. I just think it, the style of football they're going to play is going to dictate that he probably is not going to have to throw that much. I mean, he's, you know, 194 doesn't sound like a lot, but it won't shock me if he averages a little less than that, just from the standpoint of how much they want to hand the ball off, how many times they want to hand it off a game, how much they want to run the football. All of that stuff is really important to note.
Yeah, I think I'm going to say over if he plays all 17 games. I don't disagree with your logic there, Paul. I just think 194 is a low number. You know, I think if he's in that game manager role, I think I'd be looking at him averaging somewhere closer to, like, I don't know, 220, not put 300 yards every week. I don't have that expectation of him either, but I think on an average basis, I think he's going to come out a little bit above that 194 number. What I will say, and the reason that I would go under, is that I don't know that they're going to, there's no reason for them to take risks with him. If he gets, you know, hits, if he has some, you know, injuries he's dealing with over the course of the season. With Mitch Trubisky back there, I don't think you have to take risks with Kenny Pickett. So I'd be surprised if he actually does play all 17 games, Paul.
Well, that's the thing. If he misses three or four games, then all of a sudden that number probably goes up to about 225 or 230 yards a game, right? So to me, if he misses two games or three games or whatever, probably that total is going to be high, the total number of yards. is going to be high. So that's why I'm going to say I still stick to my guns. I'm going to go under.
I will go over just to make it different, but I definitely see your argument there, Paul. The other Kenny Pickett prop that we want to talk about today is his touchdown total. DraftKings has that today at 18.5 for the season, which is a little over one a game. Do you think that that is – are you going to apply the same logic there, Paul, that, oh, they're going to be running the football? You're probably going to want to have Najee Harris, you know, in the running backs and goal line situations most of the time. Or do you think that, you know, if this Steelers offense is going to take a step forward, that he's going to have to, you know, make some plays in the red zone, even if, you know, on a down-to-down basis, they want to be a little bit more run-oriented?
Well, I would say this. I think he will average closer to about 1.5 a game. So I'm going to go over. And not because I think – I mean, again, in order for them to get a lead, they're going to have to score some touchdowns. And I think that, you know, you can throw a couple of times. I mean, to me, his line, his typical stat line should be somewhere about 20 completions, right? Maybe 18 completions for like 180 to 200 yards and a touchdown or two and no interceptions or, you know what I mean? And so I'm going to say, even though it probably sounds like I'm being hypocritical, I'm going to say that I think he'll actually get there on the touchdown, on the touchdown pass prop. I think he'll get there. I think he's going to be a very efficient player. And I think his efficiency, you know, doesn't necessarily always lend to totals. But it does, I think, in terms of it translates into totals when it comes to touchdowns.
I'm going to say it had better be over, Paul, because I mean, 18.5 is still a pretty low total for a quarterback who's playing 18 games. You know, if you get three or four in one game, you have a really great game, then you're only talking about needing, you know, less than one per game to get there. And I think he's going to have a couple games like that where he has three or four and shows out. And so I think he had better get there. And I would say I can agree with the run-based offense and all that, but I think some of those things go out the window, Paul, when it's third and goal from the eighth and you got to make a play, right? And
right, so right, right.
If he goes under, I think that that is, to me, a little bit of a warning light with him that, you know, he's not making the plays at the time he needs to make them to make this game manager imagining role that people have for him work. I think if you're in there for all 17 games, you've got to be at like 20 to earn the faith that people have in him. So that's why I would say it better be over, you know, but we'll see on that one.
No, I would agree. Absolutely. I mean, I think it's definitely got to be over if they're going to be successful. It can't be under. But I just don't necessarily think you need to throw the ball, you know, 50 times a game in order to achieve a touchdown and a half. You know, I think that they, you know, grind it out a little bit on the ground. Because the thing about it is when you have a good defense, right, and you've got a team that is content and patient on offense, you tend to limit your possessions, your total number of possessions. So that would probably take away from your total compiling of yards and whatnot. But as you said, when it's go time, you got to put the ball in the end zone, you know. And so that's the way it is. I think it's just important to remember that. So, yeah, I'll say over on that one.
I think this is a big one for you, Paul, because it's Najee Harris, and we're talking about the Steelers offense, you know, transitioning to being more run-focused than we've been used to it being in the past. DraftKings currently has Najee Harris at 975.5 on the rushing yards prop. You know, for an offense that wants to run that ball, that seems low. But then again, there is Jaylen Warren in this offense as well, Paul, and I think he's gonna make some plays. I don't think he's going to take the heaviest workload away from Najee Harris, but he's definitely going to eat into the totals that Najee Harris would have, right?
Well, if he's healthy. Similar to the touchdown thing, if Najee Harris is healthy and plays 17 games and doesn't have more than 975 yards, there's a real problem. So I'm going to go over. I feel like he'll stay healthy this year. And if he stays healthy, he's going to have – I mean, really, you know, 1,000 yards used to really mean something when it was a 12-game schedule. But if you think about it now, 17-game schedule, I mean, what's 1,000 yards? 60 yards a game, something like that maybe? You know, I don't know that really is asking a whole lot more than what he should. I would, you know, if the over under, if it was at like 1150, that would probably be a more interesting discussion. You know, can he run for 1200 or 1300 yards, which is kind of the new standard, really. But 975, good God. If he does, if he stays healthy and doesn't rush for 975 yards, it's a really bad, bad thing for the Steelers. And I would add this, if that's the case, then I would go over on the Pickett total. So I really have to just take a look at it and basically say, no, I absolutely think that he will get to 975 yards.
Yeah, I think barring injury, it's a reasonable expectation of him. I think the thing for me, Paul, is we all talk about the Steelers being, I don't know, still a 9, 10, 11-win team, which means you are going to still have some negative game scripts, right? And you're going to have times where, you know, if it's not working in the first half and you're down two touchdowns and Kenny Pickett's going to have to throw a bunch, you know, it may not be a performance thing with him. It's just going to be a matter of sometimes that's how the game goes. And no one knows that better, I think, than fantasy football owners, Paul. Some weeks your guy just does nothing because that is the way the game goes for his team. That being said, I would kind of agree with you. I'm not expecting him to be like Adrian Peterson here and be flirting with 2,000 yards or anything. But 975 over a 17-game schedule with no injuries. And now, what I should say, Vegas factors the injuries in too. So they might be saying here, we think he's going to not play all 17 games. They're considering injury history, the way things have gone in his career to this point. You know, they may be factoring in losing a couple of games. So let me throw that hypothetical at you, Paul. Let's say he misses three games. What do you think of that 975 total at that point?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Three games, that's 14. I still think he should get there. If they're doing what they're supposed to do, he should get there. You know, 14 games, he should absolutely still get the 975 yards because at the end of the day, they're going to hand him the football a lot. They want to hand him the football. Even if they give 10 carries or 8 carries or whatever it is a game to Jalen Warren, if he is who we think he is, they've rebuilt the offensive line the way that we think they've built the offensive line, and they're going to play the way that it appears they want to play, I don't see how he doesn't get there unless he's not effective. And if he's not effective, that's probably a different story because then we're probably talking about a different season for the Steelers.
Yeah, I can see that. I think I'll go over there too. I just like playing devil's advocate, you know, because I think there is something to be said for just the way the game goes in the modern NFL sometimes. It's very easy for a running back to completely fall out of it if he doesn't get in a rhythm in that first quarter and establish the lead. You know, teams just go straight to the pass anymore, and it's they don't spend a lot of time trying to establish the run. So I guess this will be a big test, you know, philosophically for the Steelers. If it's not working, how long are you going to go to it? And if they're really that committed, I think he should go over it with ease. But if there are games where they say, you know what, this isn't the day, that's where I think he might start to get in trouble at that 975 total. Couple more here, Paul, before we get to some Buccos talk. Deontay Johnson, over or under 825.5 receiving yards at DraftKings right now?
Well, I think a better question would be over under one half touchdowns.
I mean, Paul, I wanted to put it on there, and they didn't have it listed. But so that's a little confidence they have in him scoring.
Okay, so what was the number?
825.5.
That would be what? That would be about what? 50. Five,
a little less maybe, than 50, I think.
Yeah, maybe a little bit less than 50 yards per game. Wow. That is a really good number, Adam. I mean, that's like right on the number. That's right about where I would have them. I'm going to go – wow. I'm going to go slightly over. Slightly over.
I was going to say I'm going to go slightly under, Paul, because I think if things work in this passing game, the way the Steelers want to, if you have all of these other targets getting involved, I think we're past the point where Deontay Johnson's just getting the ball forced to him like Roethlisberger did in that last season with him, where he put up those big totals. You know, I think you're going to see the ball distributed, and that's why I would say slightly under, but I would agree with you that I think it's a pretty fair number.
I do. I think that's right on the number. Adam, the thing about it is they really only have one other receiver. I mean, for what everyone keep talking about, I mean, George Pickens is the only other known factor that they have when it comes to receivers. I mean, again, I know that we're supposed to put Calvin Austin in the Hall of Fame because a couple of guys saw him at training camp really do well or whatever it was, right? But I got to see the guy play in an NFL game with pads on and with a helmet on and with, you know, 200-pound or 225-pound linebackers wanting to take his head off across the middle before I really believe that this guy is as good as everyone wants us to believe. I mean, he's been in the NFL, and we haven't seen him yet. You know, the big tight end, it seems to me like they got him to be a blocker. So you're really talking about Freiermuth, right? Uh-huh. And Pickens. I just don't know that, you know, they'll distribute the ball like they do. They like to throw it a little bit. They're one pass a game to Connor Hayward. And, you know, maybe they're one pass every 3 weeks to who's the other guy? Do they still have Gentry or whatever his name is, the other tight end? But I just don't see that they've got enough weapons that they can really be this team that throws it and really spreads it around. I mean, I think you can throw it a little bit to Najee out of the backfield, and you've got Freiermuth, and you've got Pickens. And so I don't know that there's really that many alternatives for them to throw the ball to someone other than Deontay Johnson.
You don't have faith in late-stage Allen Robinson here, Paul?
No. Well, I forgot about him. Okay. Let's – is there an over-under for him?
I think he's way too low to be listed on the prospect.
That's what I was going to say. So. Like, what are we talking about with him? 300 yards maybe for this year? Maybe a little bit more than that. But at the end of the day, I just, like I said, I just don't think there's that many alternate really places where you want to throw the ball. You know, Deontay Johnson's one of your playmakers. So I think that he's going to be a guy you want to get the ball to.
Yeah, the thing I'd say, Paul, is that 300 yards for Allen Robinson seems completely reasonable to me. But given what we were just talking about with Kenny Pickett and Najee Harris and the wanting to run the ball, how many receiving yards are there going to be available? And if 300 are going to Allen Robinson, let's say 450, 500 are going to Calvin Austin. You know, let's say another 500, 600 to Pat Freiermuth. How many more are left? I think that's the reason that I would go under. It's not because I'm like necessarily bullish on anyone else that they've got to kind of be like a big game changer here. I would just say there's going to be fewer passing yards available. And for that reason, I think even if some of those guys just eat in a little bit, that could drive Deontay Johnson down.
Right. Well, I could see that. But like I said, I'll be shocked if we're talking about 450 yards for Calvin Austin. I'll be shocked. Again, I've been shocked in the past. But I'll be shocked if Robinson and Austin combine for more than about 500 or 600 yards total between the two of them. So, you know, to me, I look at it and just say, you don't have that many playmakers, despite what everyone would love us to believe. They just don't have that many playmakers.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Although I also question to what degree is Deontay Johnson a playmaker when – you know, he doesn't have a Hall of Famer throwing the ball to him. And so maybe I'm just a little more skeptical about him as a receiver as well. Because there were times last season, Paul, where, you know, I remember screaming about the receivers and everyone wanted to talk about the quarterbacks. Everyone wanted to blame Mitch Trubisky there early on. But those receivers were playing poorly. They were grading poorly. And it wasn't just Mitch Trubisky or it wasn't just Kenny Pickett that was the source of the problems. I think Deontay Johnson underachieved. And I think if he's the same player this year, that's why I would still go slightly under as well. Last one I got for you, Paul, on the Steelers is George Pickens over under 4.5 touchdown. What do you think of that total?
I think if it's an under, it's a bad sign for the Steelers. So I'm going to go over. I think he should lead them in touchdown receptions this year. And if your leading receiver in touchdown receptions has only four, to me, I would say basically you haven't done a good job of really getting your receivers and things of the such involved. So I expect Pickens to have like 7 or 8 touchdown passes. So I will say receptions. I will say Pickens is going to be over that number.
Okay, I will say I think 4.5 is a pretty good total. I'll go slightly under. If I was setting it, I think I'd set the number at 5, which means you need 6 to go over. So at that point, I think it's a little bit better of a number. I think the thing I need to see from Pickens this season is an ability to, you know, flip the – you want to see him make those deep, spectacular catches down the field on the sideline. But can he be the guy in the red zone that starts making those plays? I don't know that we've seen that yet. I think that's why this total is a little bit lower. I will go over the 4.5, but I will say I don't know if I would go over if it was 5.
Wow. Yeah, like I said, I think that's that would be a bad sign for the Steelers. To me, he's got to have 7 or 8 at least. He has to be their guy this year in terms of that. So I would say if it's not over, it's a real problem.
Fair enough. And Paul, with that, I think we've touched all of our overs. Before we move on to the Pirates, just another reminder, this video is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. We thank them for sponsoring all of our Steelers content. With that, Paul, I want to move on to the Buccos. And we've had a nice, you know, beginning here with Henry Davis, Nick Gonzalez. They've gotten some big hits. They've helped this team out in a lot of games. I think they have been so far what a lot of us were hoping they would be for this team. My question for you, Paul, is how legit does this feel to you? Because I think we've seen guys come up at different points where the book isn't out on them. Scouting reports don't necessarily say how you're supposed to attack Nick Gonzalez or Henry Davis. And we've seen guys like Rodolfo Castro. We've seen Jack Sawinski, who I'm going to get to in a minute, come up, have a lot of success, and then when the book's out on them, they struggle. And then they have failed to punch back. Are you seeing enough from these guys to believe that they're going to punch back better than some of these other prospects that have come up before them?
I think Davis and Gonzalez are legitimate players. That doesn't mean they're not going to have struggles. That doesn't mean that there's not going to be growing pains. But I think both of those guys should be in the lineup every single day. And I think if they are, they'll get better. They'll go through that period where the league, you know, scouts them and kind of figures out how to and they'll make their adjustments. I think they're two really good young players who, at this point, there's no reason in the world why both of them shouldn't be in the lineup every single day, you know, with the exception of the, you know, nowadays they got to have a day of rest or whatever. But for the most part, those should be your right fielder and second baseman of the future.
I think my thing is I think Henry Davis can hit. I think he developed that long before the Pirates drafted him, and I think it's just been a matter of perfecting his game. I think he's going to hit no matter what. I'm curious to see what happens with Nick Gonzalez because he's one of many middle infielders who have now come up for the Pirates in the course of the Ben Cherington regime. And those guys haven't been able to punch back. And there have been murmurs about, well, is Nick Gonzalez's development been where the Pirates where it should be? He wasn't really tearing it up in AAA. He had about an 800 OPS, which is solid if you're producing that in the big leagues. But do you think that he can put that number up over a long period of time? I think he's the one that I need to see a little bit more from, Paul.
Well, I think the kid has talent. I really do. I think there's no question he has talent. I like what I've seen from him so far. I think he's better than Rodolfo Castro. So to me, I would say yes. I like Nick Gonzalez. I do. I like what I've seen from him.
All right, that's fair. Yeah, and I guess I just want to see a little bit more, but definitely what we've seen so far is pretty good. Paul, another person that you teased that I want to talk about is Jack Sawinski. I think, you know, a lot of people are saying, like you've said, that there maybe there's some flaws there. He strikes out a lot. He goes through these just terrible funks where he goes a week and maybe doesn't get more than 2 or 3 hits. So, I see the frustration, but I also went and I'm going to include the link down in the description to my monthly analytics report where we look at some relevant trends on these guys. And Jack Sawinski holds up very well compared to a guy like Pedro Alvarez, who I think people, when he was at his zenith in 13, 14, 15, people loved him and they thought he was a great hitter. Jack Sawinski is exceeding what would be Pedro Alvarez's career highs in getting on base and hitting for isolated power, not just home runs, but doubles as well, extra base hits. You know, so Winski's right there with Pedro Alvarez historically. So I would agree that he's still a flawed player. I think if he can continue to do this over a full season, Paul, you're really going to get to a point where you have to start to trust that the power is worth whatever you're losing in a, you know, 0 for 50 funk, or whatever you're losing if he's striking out a third of the time.
Right. Well, I would tell you this much right now. It's one of those things where Jack Suwinski, to me, I think Joe Block actually tweeted out. Did you see this? Where Joe Block tweeted out something. He tweeted out something to the effect of Jack Suwinski has more home runs through, you know, 600 plate appearances than any Pirate in the history of the Pirates, which I thought was an amazing number. Again, this is an organization that doesn't have a lot of power. They don't have a lot of guys that hit the ball out of the park. So, you know, you've got a guy like Suwinski. You have to hope that the numbers beyond his power numbers get better as he gets out there, that maybe he's able to start taking a few more pitches and maybe not necessarily trying to hit every single one of them out of the park and going the other way a little bit. I mean, I don't think he has to really raise his average that much and things like his on-base percentage that much to become a really, really important player for this team on a team that's looking to contend. If you've got a guy that's got the ability maybe to hit 30, 35, 40 home runs, you almost have to live with whatever deficiencies he might have in some of those offensive categories. I don't think he's the perfect player, but I think for a team that really severely has a hard time scoring runs and lacks power, he's somebody that you've got to continue to really, take a hard, long look at. Is he maybe the guy who is the center fielder of the future?
Yeah, I think, we talked about before with Nick Gonzalez and Henry Davis, I have a question. Last year, he couldn't punch back. When the league adjusted, he failed to punch back. He ended up in AAA. And I think he can kind of throw out everything that happened from that point forward. This year, he got off to the strong start again. He's gone through his, like, long funk. This time, they're showing more commitment to him because I think he's hitting for power more often because he's doing the things he needs to do more often. The question is, can he avoid this becoming a month-long slump, a month-and-a-half-long slump, the type of thing that causes him to have to go back to AAA? If he can be the player he was at the beginning of last season and the player he's been to this point, I think they might have one of the few surprises in this organization on their hands in terms of guys that we didn't necessarily have a ton of expectations for becoming good. And I think those are the types of guys you need, Paul, to really supercharge these rebuilds. You can't just rely on the big name prospects always panning out the way that you want them to, because some of them won't. And that's okay as long as you're getting guys like Suwinski, right?
If you get a guy like Suwinski, who actually is a power hitter, that can hit the ball out of the park, that can change innings for you and everything else, and you get him, you know, and he's not one of your high picks or one of your high pedigree picks, it's a gem. It's a hidden gem that probably you look at and say, we didn't count on this guy being this guy, right? But it makes up for some of the misses that we've had. It makes up for some of the guys that we were counting on. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, when you're sitting out there, when you're sitting at the ballpark and you're trying to go watch the team and root the team on, do you really care if he was a first-round pick or the first pick in the draft or if he was the fifth-round pick? You don't care about that. What you care about is the eight guys out there plus the pitcher are really good and able to get the job done. And so, to me, if he is the hidden gem that, you know, it appears he might be, then I would say, if nothing else, it covers for a multitude of sins they've made with some of their high draft picks and some of the misses they've made on some of the prospects they've traded for and whatnot.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's what any good organization needs, right? How long have we watched the Cardinals kind of dominate the Pirates because they have guys that you're not expecting to be good turn into guys that torture the Pirates for a decade? That's what the Pirates need to do if they're going to be able to sustain this and not just ride some number one draft picks through their, you know, major league minimum years, through their arbitration years, and then have to start over like they did at the end of the Neil Huntington era. You're going to need guys like Jack Sawinski to exceed your expectations. They didn't get enough of that under Huntington. They better get it under Charrington. Paul, also wanted to get you out of here on this. The Penguins obviously made the controversial move this week to give Tristan Jarry 5 more years as the Penguins goaltender. You know, I think there's a lot of people who said, well, you know, there wasn't a whole lot on the market. This was the best you were going to do, is at least you have a guy you know, rather than taking a chance on a guy you don't being the right fit. Where do you land on whether it was the right move or not to go back to him at goal? And what did you think of some of these other free agency moves?
I hated it because it's a 5-year deal. And I think that who's on the market? Oh, well, there wasn't many other people on the market. Okay, well, that doesn't mean you sign a guy to a 5-year deal. If you're really, really concerned that there isn't a lot on the market right now, you go out and get one of those veteran guys for a 1-year deal. And then next year, when your cap situation is a little better and when you are able to maybe have better options on the market, you go and you address goalie. And I understand that with Crosby and Malkin and Letang, there's flights of fantasy about how they could contend for a cup. Well, first of all, Tristan Jarry's never proven he can be a good playoff goalie, that he can really take you deep in the playoffs. And recently, he hasn't even been available for the playoffs. So at the end of the day, you know, you have to be realistic about moving forward with this organization and starting the rebuild, even if you're not completely tearing it down. Because ultimately, if you don't have Tristan, if you went out and got one of these veterans that is a little bit older and you're not going to give a long-term deal to, I don't know that it really changes the Penguins' fortunes for this year all that much. You might even improve them but at the end of the day, you've got to think about long-term and locking up Tristan Jarry for 5 years. I don't know that was a really good move for the long-term. As far as the other deals, I like them. I think they've gone from a two-line team to a 3-line team, maybe even a 4-line team. You know, they added a center, I think, who's really going to add some value. They added a couple of wings that I think wingers that are going to be pretty good depth players. And also not just depth, but I think push some other guys down out of the, you know, out of the lineup. I actually look at it right now. I don't see that there's a place for a guy like Jeff Carter, for instance, which is always going to be a good thing. I think they added some size and physicality, the defensive core. I like what they've done in every aspect, Adam, except for goalie. And unfortunately, that's the most important and only real question we had going into this offseason.
Yeah, we sat here on the show last week, Paul, and we said that's what we want to know about. Now we know, and I share the skepticism for Tristan Jarry. 5 years seems, you know, maybe that's just – maybe the goalie market really is that bad, but it seems like then that's a pretty sad commentary about goaltending in the NHL, Paul, isn't it? Because he's just – he hasn't proven the ability to be the guy, and if you can still get out there and get a 5-year deal, what does that say about goaltending in the NHL? One question I have for you, Paul, about the wingers and such, Graves, Nieto, Lars Eller, none of them really blow my socks off. But do you think that this is a matter of – do you think these guys are going to fit what Mike Sullivan wants to do? And if they do, then there will be a lot of upside here because there were guys that definitely didn't fit with what he wanted to do last year.
That, and I think they're a little better options than what they've had. That's the biggest thing. I think you can start to move some of the guys out of the lineup. Like the previously aforementioned Jeff Carter. And it'll be interesting to see, Adam. It'll be interesting to see, because he's obviously making a lot of money, if they're going to have the ability to, healthy scratch him pretty much every game. And just basically pay him his salary and let him ride it out. I mean, they don't have many other options because he's, you know, his age, his service time, and all that other stuff.
Yeah, I wonder if this is going to be one of those, October 15th injuries that, you know, he ends up on long-term injured reserve for, you know, a long time, opens up some cap space, gives him the ability to make a trade. I wonder if maybe there's some of that going on, Paul.
I'm sure they're going to have to be really creative. And the other guy they'll do that with is Granlund as well, right? I mean, those are two guys that if we never see them play for the Penguins again, it would be a good thing.
Yeah, I think if those guys, like even chip a tooth, they're going to be possibly, you know, on long-term injured reserve, and the Penguins are going to be making some of those. Didn't the Tampa Bay Lightning keep someone on injured reserve all year? One of their best players until the playoff. That's what we're talking about here, Paul, where they're circumventing the rules a little bit with some of these contracts. Maybe that's why Kyle Dubas is a little more dubious, not to use those words together, about, you know, buying some of these guys out, because maybe he feels that there's ways you can manipulate them to give yourself a chance to improve at this next trade deadline in a way you didn't at this past one.
Right. That's what's going to be the plan. I guarantee it. They're not going to have all of that money and dead cap space just sitting there, but they're not going to play those guys. At least they shouldn't. If they do, Adam, it's a really bad thing. And it also would suggest that all of these moves they just made this last week, they clearly didn't do enough.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's going to be a bit of a project. I don't know if we're going to know what the Penguins are going to look like by the end of the season at the beginning. That's what a long hockey season's for, right, Paul?
Right. But again, they, I think, got a little bigger, a little more physical. I think they got the ability probably to block a few more shots in front of their goalie. I do think they got better and they got deeper. By how much, we'll find out. But I do think, you know, and if you think about it, they were a team that basically needed to beat one of the two worst teams in the league in the last week of the season to make a playoffs. So it's not going to take all that much to get them back into being a playoff team. It's not going to take that much of an improvement, and I think they've improved by at least that much.
Reasons for optimism, Paul. Well, that's all I got for you. Any final thoughts before we sign off here?
No, man. I appreciate it, and let's do it again next week.
Yep, looking forward to it. Thanks, Paul, and thank you, everyone, for watching. Make sure you stay tuned on Friday. We'll be back with the Friday episode of the North Shore Drive podcast with Christopher Carter. He'll have plenty of Steelers talk, maybe a little bit more baseball talk. So make sure you're subscribed and make sure you check that out. Otherwise, yeah, I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post Gazette Sports. If you liked the video, please like it and subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you enjoyed it on Apple Podcasts, please rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. For 6 months of digital access to post-gazette.com for just $6, click the link down in the description.